I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello and welcome to episode number 79 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. I hope you're all well and feeling hunky-dory. This week you're going to meet Riker, aka Ryan Callanan. I've known Ryan for some time. He's been in a couple of my face value shows. And this is one podcast that's been on the cards for ages, pretty much since I started. But it'd be one of those things where I've got time to do it, but he hasn't, then he's got time to do it, but I haven't. And the thing is, out of all the artists I know, Ryan lives the closest. And even at the start of lockdown, I said to keep our sanity, I'd pop round to him, sit outside on his doorstep and just pass a mic through the letterbox. We did sit round my table recording this for about 2.5 hours, but luckily for you, I did edit it down to an hour. I'll tell you what I didn't mention in this podcast, which I really should have. There's a photograph of me that I use a lot in my artwork. It was taken on the day I was released from prison. It's a stereotypical prison photograph with me staring straight at the camera with my name and number being held across my chest. I had one of the large photographs at home. Well, Jenny, my other half, she knew how much I liked Riker's work. And for my 50th, she got hold of one of my prints and gave it to Ryan. And he used my image to create an artwork. I was properly chuffed. And it would have been so relevant in this podcast because we was talking about using images of other people and other people's work in our own. It's an age-old quandary that's been going on for years and probably go on for years more. So I won't rab it on too much. We'll go straight into this conversation. So come sit round my kitchen table with me and Riker. Anyway, I've got 7 questions I ask each artist.
All right.
The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that didn't know your work?
How would I explain it? It's a bit of everything, I guess. Sculptures, prints, toys. I like most of the stuff I make and I want to keep it. I don't know if that's a thing.
That's a blinding answer.
I couldn't possibly keep all the stuff that I made because I've filled up. I was just getting lectured about this before I left from my missus about how much space I've occupied with stuff that I just hoard.
Yeah.
So I'm probably solidly occupy about 1,000 square foot of warehouse in space. If it add up all the things I've got in different locations, if it was all packed tightly.
Of yours? Of your own?
I don't even know what it is. Like, bits of glass that's printed. Like, just, you know, like, things that I think, oh, they're stock, and then they're projects I abandon halfway through, but I don't throw the bits away because I'm, I don't know, I'm like, oh, that costs that much, so I'm going to keep them. Knowing full well, I'll never use them.
And what do they start off as? Do they start off as maquettes or ideas for other work, or do you make the work and just want to keep some of it yourself and not make it into additions? Because it's
just,
it's nostalgia for yourself being hip-hop and the rave scene.
Yeah, I mean, music, definitely, like the 90s, late 80s, 90s music is, and, you know, if that's, that's sort of, you know, everyone says that their bit of music is the best.
Yeah.
And that, that shifts with every generation. There's that, you sort of shit on the things that come before, and everyone's got rose-tinted glasses for their sort of period in art, music. I think if you look at 90s art, that was pretty golden in this country. So, and then you throw into the mix, you have Britpop, all the American rap, the films that came out in the 90s. If anything, the rave scene was the most sort of casual because there's no dress codes. It was just, it was about getting shit-faced and dancing.
So did you start making artwork during that scene, or was it after you come out of that scene and you were just reflecting back on it?
No, well, the thing is, rave, I'm too young for the proper rave scene. So I'm like, when I started going out, I was, we're talking about the turn of millennium is when I started going.
I was a dozen years before that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was born in 81. So, you know. So it's like, you know, I was a child when Acid House hit. I was like 8, 9 years old. But the thing with me is like when I got into like the rap. So mid 90s, I'm in school. You know, got into the rap at the time. Like sort of Biggie, Tupac and all that. And then I was into like the dance music that was also happening, but also Britpop. So you had like the Stone Roses, which were a bit on the trippier side, and then you had the whole Manchester thing. But I got into like, it's a weird one now because I work with Norman Cook, but I remember his record, You've Come a Long Way, Baby, being like something I was listening to just as I was about to leave school. And then that was before the internet. So if you liked a sound, you had to go to an old record shop and listen to stuff. And I remember Virgin was really good in Oxford Street because you could pick up a CD on the shop floor and they'd load it and you could go and listen to it in a booth. And then I just got into like looking at like record labels and sort of seeing what else was on the labels. Now it's really easy. Like you know, you've got algorithms that suggest stuff. And you're finding things by accident, but there wasn't. I mean, I didn't even know about good radio stations back then, so I didn't really listen to good radio that much. It was all about.
I've started listening to Centrefolds again. Did you know Centrefolds? I suppose you were too young for Centrefolds.
Yeah, I don't remember it the first time around, but I know. I've got like a family member who plays on there.
Yeah. So when did you start making art that was reflecting on that?
I started making, well, it was almost as soon as I started making art. Once I'd left college, I got a job doing sign making because I didn't study art. I wanted to do film.
And what did you study at college?
Film. Model making and prop design and 3D design. And then couldn't get into that industry because it was pretty nepotistical. And offered to work for free. I thought I had an in, and I went to, I'm sure it was Pinewood, it might have been Shepherd, no, it was Pinewood, and I knew a guy for the pub that I worked in part-time while I was at college. He was a chippy, and he'd been in films for donkey's years, like he'd worked on Star Wars and all this, and he took me one day there to meet the model makers and that, on Tomb Raider 2, and they were just doing that, but they wouldn't even take, I had a car, so I could get there, it was going to cost me money, they wouldn't take me on. And I thought, well, I know the work that I did wasn't that shit because I got a good mark, and I you could tell what was good and what was not, you know, just looking at
the experience.
Yeah, and they were, weren't giving it to me, and I was like, well, can't afford to, if I can't get a job in this for free, then I'm not going to bother. Yeah. I'm not, you know, there's nothing more I can do. And then I took a job at a sign place, again through the same pub that I worked in. There was another couple, it's weird, it's who Hippo are.
Oh yeah,
yeah, so Ian, yeah, his brother ran the sign company.
Oh yeah,
in Stratford. And then I got a job, they got me a job, well, they got me an interview or a sort of talk, and then I talked myself into it, and I started like a week later. And so I got that job, and I did that for about, it's got to be probably two years. And then because I was in this environment where that's the first time I'd ever seen screen printing, because they were, the same company had Weatherspoon's contracts. Nice. And the screen table was purely used for sign printing, outdoor signage. So not anymore, they don't do it, but for a time it was just, that's how I saw that was my first introduction to screen printing, other than reading about it, seeing it in this like industrial context.
Yeah. And how immediate it can be made.
Yeah. And and then Lynn, who was working, she was one of the designers there, she was also like doing a printmaking masters, and she'd done stuff, and she used to do stuff after hours of her own. And then I remember going to the Santa's Ghetto on Oxford Street.
Yeah.
I can't remember what year it is. It must be 2005 or 6.
Something like that.
And that was where I'd seen like Banksy stuff for years, like just, you know, not bought any, not paid any attention to it, like as a collectible thing. Yeah. Or I weren't into it that much, because I just was like, oh, they're only like 50 quid posters. I'm not really, don't really understand all this. But the one that made, the first print I ever bought, I still got it, is the Elis tube barber.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The yellow one.
Yeah.
Because I was like, that was the thing that, well, I like stencil stuff, but up until that point, yeah, there was nothing, I hadn't seen any Star Wars imagery, and then that just sort of blew me away. And I was like, fucking hell, if you can do Star Wars, I got my GCSE, yeah, doing a Star Wars picture. So I was like, oh, didn't know that was a, you know, because I didn't go to art school, I weren't like sort of setting rules to myself. No. But I was just kind of like, oh, fucking hell, yeah, basically this could be anything.
Do anything you want.
Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of like hip hop and punk rock in a way. It's like there's no rules, there's no thing. But like with most things, I started, you know, I did my own thing. In fact, my first image wasn't Star Wars, it was The Honor Islam.
Yeah.
And yeah, put that up, and then I was already working on a Star Wars one, which was the Reservoir Troopers.
So you were just putting it on the balls at the time?
Not on the balls, no. Just I just thought, I'm going to make a screen print. Like I worked on this image, worked on these images, and went straight in and made screen prints. Didn't
show it where online?
Well, The Honor Islam, I just put on eBay and did that thing with
like
keyword spamming, because I didn't know that was not allowed. Because I'd always search for stuff and find all these things that are, you know, like word association. It still goes on now, but they try and clamp down on it. And I just put, so I put my first Honor Islam print up, and it was a red background. And, you know, did the tags that I thought were relevant, like Banksy, Stencil, Urban, da, da, and I sold one in 35 minutes.
Nice.
So then I was like, fucking hell.
Confidence boost.
Yeah, and they were cheap. They're only like 30 quid or something. But because I'd made them myself, and the screens didn't cost me anything, because we were turning screens, like we had hundreds of screens there, so I could always slip a little artwork on things as well. So that was handy. I just bought myself some like paper and did it all, and you know, the ink was like, I used industrial inks. It was all there. I mean, I did buy my own colour, and the boss, like Neil, he sort of saying like, look, all these facilities here, if you want to stay later, you can just use and do whatever you want, have a, you know, just have some fun. And so that was how that started. It was just sort of semi self motivational, I guess. See, you know, buying that Elis print for 50 quid, getting it home, being a bit disappointed with the quality of the printing, which is nothing to do with Elis,
no,
but a lot of them old POW ones are on shit paper and sort of bad ink, and then they made like 250 of them, and loads of colours had sold out. And I was like, fucking hell, when you add all that up, he sold 1,500 images of like, well, versions of that, and then he'd done, you know, all the other Star Wars bits he'd started or done before. And I was like, well, I've got some Star Wars ideas that I think are alright. I'll try and go that way, because, like, you know, it's always, like I said at the start, it's just doing things that I liked. And then, yeah, did that, and just kept the momentum, really. Just started working on multiple things and having the job in the background, and it helped being in that environment sort of every day, because it was, everything starts to inspire you then. Because it's like, and then that's when I started looking at, you know, pub signs differently. And then even like doing the first little miniature pub signs, it made like, you know, pub fascias with glass and incised text. My first ones date back to 2008. That's how long, like, it's almost as soon as I did Honor Islam in end of 2006, then I did Prince for whole of 7, and then by 2008 I was doing shows in Soho. Nice. With other things, like, and then, but so it, from very early it was like I did, I think I even did my first little acid faces around 2008.
Yeah. And so all of that has been the foundation for still where you are now. Star Wars, hip hop, and acid.
I guess it's just
and the pub signs.
I guess like hip, like, so all the music, hip hop, acid, the pub signs, everything I sort of touch on is not that, you could say that's all nostalgia, and then I try and mix humour with that to make things that are, I don't know, just a bit different. Sometimes I'm not even like that fussed. Like, people like to call you out, especially now. Like, there wasn't Instagram, there wasn't all that massive social media thing when I started out, and it was pre collapse of the banks. So there was a lot of money, and like a lot of my work, I mean, I went from doing editions of 10 of Honor Islam to doing 150 of Reservoir Troopers, and it's selling out with the Scroll Collective online. And on the, so I went from like doing it on eBay to working with Rick at the Scroll Collective, who had Will Barris, Mr. Jago. He'd published books on, like, some of the earliest books on street art by this guy Rick from the Scroll Collective. And suddenly I was like, that's how I met Dave Walker. He was already there. There was tons, I mean, I've missing loads off, but the list was crazy. Like, She One was on it, all these people have been, what, doing it 10 years already. And I went in there and I was did my print, and it flew out. So we did like 150 of them at 50.
So was you
pop.
Still working for the sign makers at the time?
Yeah, still full time.
So what point did you realise you wanted to be an artist?
I still don't think I want to be an artist now. I just don't. I sort of, if someone asks me what I do, I never say I'm an artist. I sort of find it a bit weird and embarrassing. I think that's because of like social conditioning. I still, you know, what are you? Are you what you did at college and qualified in, or are you what you do as a job?
Yeah.
If you're in certain circles, it's different. Like, if you're having a chat in a gallery with someone, it's different. You can go, I'm an artist. It's a different setting. But if I'm on holiday with a family, someone's like, oh, what do you do? Then I'm like, oh. You know, that's when I find it awkward, because usually you're talking to someone who's doing a more regular job.
Yeah.
I like to think I don't fit the stereotype of what an artist is.
Yeah.
I meet proper artists who I think, well, yeah, you are like the fucking cliche.
Yeah, but that's just in your mind, isn't it?
Because that's a social thing, yeah.
As we've had this chat a few times, I've got a chip on my shoulder that people don't see me as a legitimate artist. It's because of the way that I speak and because of my background.
Yeah,
but then it took me a few years to go, well, fuck them. You know, it's their hang up.
The exterior.
And do you think you don't like calling yourself an artist because you've got a preconceived idea of what an artist is?
Definitely. Well, it's one of the things I never studied up with art. It has there is a power, there is a structure there, isn't there? You can be an artist, you can sell stuff, and you can move. I don't know, it's like a weird game of snakes and ladders art. I think it's more like that. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I've seen it open up a lot more in the last few years. When I've done my first exhibition, like a group show, I realised how hard it was to do that. But then it does open up that you can do so much more. Like, I've been earning money for the last year or so doing art consultancy with artists and go through their whole body of work and see in what direction it could go. You know, you sort of, you think you know where you are, but sometimes I feel you've got to pause, step off the tracks, have a little look around and see what other directions you could go. But then when you have someone else come in and go, yeah, oh, I like that, why don't you try this? And you go, well, I've never thought of that, because that ain't in your line of thinking. Sometimes yeah, you need someone else.
I guess you can get tunnel vision, can't yeah, you? Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, one of the things I do like to do is, you could, I mean, you, some people would like to call me like copying someone, which I think is a, like, such a lazy term in art. When it's like, oh, straight away, oh, you've copied this from there. It's like, well, you're assuming I know what you're talking about yeah, first. That of all the billions of people on the planet, you're saying two people can't have the same idea, no, right? And just because I make art doesn't mean I know every single fucking thing that's ever been done yeah, before. That's not how it works. No one does.
No.
Like, I feel myself doing that when I see stuff online now, because like Instagram's constant, isn't it? You can see, I've probably seen 1,000 images today, but yeah, I don't know if I have. But the ones that you like, you take a little mental snapshot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one of my things is I go through and I'm like, well, what things, it's that thing again, it's like, what do I like? What would I like to own? And then it comes to, do I think it's worth that? So I was always a big fan of like all the series of the dot paintings that Damien Hirst did, up until I found and went to the Tate Gerhard Richter show and saw his colour charts that
yeah,
predate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that really fucks with me in a positive and negative way. So I'm like, I felt less guilty about my series of heart dot paintings, which are just a derivative of circles. It's a yeah, shape on a, you know, they are a homage to that. You can call it a homage, you can call it a rip-off, you can call it whatever you like. But no one knows.
It's like a remix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a remix. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's like hip-hop samples. Like, hip-hop wouldn't exist if it weren't for sampling. And rave is all about sampling. Like, yeah, no one plays any drums, but it's all drum-heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's sampling. So I always take that of, like, I make art with the essence of a music producer, which is I'll just fucking sample, and I'm not asking for clearance.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna make it. Yeah, but
like you're saying with them hearts and Damien Hirst, you can have that as an influence for this work you're doing now.
I always look, when I first saw the dots, I always thought they were like a riff on like polka dots from that, and I like, it never struck me as like the most original idea in art. I just like the way they were executed, and you know, they come in all shapes and sizes, and they've got really funny sort of medical drug names, yeah, didn't they? And I was like, well, it's you know, it's sort of it's a remix, and I've done plenty of remixes, and I think if I like the idea of the remix, it should exist even if no one wants to listen to it, because I think that's again, like, that's I know a lot of music producers now, and that the whole thing is like, how do you start making a record that is going to be a hit? You don't. You just
it takes its own course, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky to have the, you know, knowing like Norman Cook, and knowing his work as Fatboy Slim, it's like, it's all about finding things, remixing them, throwing them together. And I just was like, that's great. And all my favourite hip hop tracks have like samples of soul records and, you know, I don't know the sources, but someone who wants the shit on hip hop listens to a hip hop record and goes, well, that beat's from that, you know, that's from this, and it's like, alright, you're deconstructing it, but I only know this version, and now you're telling me about that. But that's why music was a good thing for me, because I was like, I got into music, I don't know how to make music. I approach it when I'm like researching something now, I'm like, well, where did it come from, where did this, because this, nothing's original, no. So it's like, well, what's like it, what inspired this, what, and then, yeah, stumbling across, like, I've seen Gerhard Richter's stuff way before he did that Tate show, and I just knew him as the, you know, that scraping painting massive things, and they're like, I think the scale of a lot of that high blue chip art is kind of what makes it phenomenal. Rather than sometimes the ideas are not that great, but if you make something 400%, 500% bigger than someone who's doing a similar thing,
yeah,
you're going to win her. Yeah.
It was like them splash paintings that Damien Hirst done.
The spin paintings?
Spin paintings, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still not a fan of all that.
I like them, but you can trace them back. There was him and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Angus Fairhurst. When the Art Car Boot Fair first started, there was a little toy you could buy and you put these little discs of paper down and you sort of go like that to make it spin and then you put splash little bits of paper.
That's a pottery wheel,
isn't it? Like, yeah, sort of thing. And you throw your ink or little paints on and it throws it out.
Yeah.
And that's what they were making on the Art Car Boot Fair. Little, I don't know how big they were, maybe 4 or 6 inches. And they were selling them. All he's done is just made a big machine for it.
Yeah, but I mean, like when I see the spin paintings, I'm always like, well, that he didn't invent that idea. It's like it's hundreds of years old.
Yeah, but it's just an abstract painting.
Yeah, and I that's why I'm not a massive fan, because there's no like mystery in it for me. But then at the same time, like I'm like, well, that makes my, you know, I could just live my entire life not ever wanting to see one of those spin paintings. But then seeing the formaldehyde animals, for me, that was a different thing. Like that.
But that was just the same thing. That's only what you're doing with what he was doing. He was just going back to science class in school.
Yeah, I guess art is
just going back to your nostalgia.
Yeah, I mean,
playing by your strengths and what you know.
Yeah, the longer I do it, you realise that, you know, anything can be art. And it's a lot of the... It's just presentation. Like, how do you present the idea as art? I do love all, like, even a lot of people would shit on, like, the Damien Hirst retrospective at the Tate was amazing. I thought,
brilliant.
Like the room that was just medical cabinets, and I was explaining to my mate that it was it's all lined up with the ointments and the treatments are anatomically listed, aren't they? From head to from head to toe, toe to head. And I was like, that's the idea there. The idea isn't just a fucking cabinet.
And it's on a mirror as well, so you can see yourself in that as well.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's like art stuff was.
So where did the toys come into it?
Again, I made my first toys in 2008. So...
Very, just through the love of toys, Star Wars.
Yeah, possibly. Collecting toys, Star Wars. I'd say Star Wars, hip hop, acid culture, they're reoccurring themes throughout it, and sort of humour. I guess they're the four main ingredients. But yeah, I mean, I collect toys, always been into toys. I sort of never grew out of them. Again, as I was leaving school, we're talking like 97, 98. Star Wars just got its rejigged versions with the CGI, the re-releases. And for me, at the time, I was just blown away that they'd managed to add more to these films. So it just relit this fire that never went out.
Yeah.
And then it was like throwing fucking petrol on it. And I was like, shit. And I did actually leave school in GCSE an expressionist version of a Star Wars scene. But they were like, you've got to look at, you know, what's come before, what artists you like sort of pick a movement or a genre, pick an artist within the movement, and then you springboard off that and you do a
version. Mine was pretty much like that.
Yeah. And then you have a theme, don't you, for your GCSE. And our theme was, I studied my subject like that, which was model making, 3D design, and I use those skills to make art, because it's that whole thing of anything can be art, it's just the context of it. So in a way, I do a lot of I still make a lot of things, I just don't sell them as, I sell them as art. I'm not making props for films,
because going to university won't make your practice any different, and the way you think about it,
no,
well, it will make the way you think about it different, but it won't make your practice any different. You'll still produce the same work.
I guess you'd like what you're doing now. It just enhances
you as a person.
Or you're analysing stuff. And where I'm kind of like, in a way, I know a lot of people who've got art degrees and stuff, and it feels like they have to unlearn that to like truly flourish.
I agree with that, yeah.
It's like, in a way, I'm like, I don't know art discipline to that degree, literally that degree, but the longer I've been doing it a long time and sort of picking up stuff, and I'm not, you know, I don't know where I sit in it, like, is there a movement? I wasn't a street artist. You just get lumped in with it. The people's work I admire, not necessarily the people, but like, I saw Anthony Lister paint the side of a school building in Miami years ago, and he fucking just owned the wall in about an hour.
Yeah.
But what I did at Mark's shop is painting by numbers. I had to grid it out, plan it, because the image I put on that building was...
It's a precise image.
It was precise, it was specific, I made it so it didn't hit the window.
It was smiley faces and that heart. Looked like they was...
And heart. Yeah, they're... I just call them love and happy beings.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's not like a really, really deep meaning to them other than they're sort of based on...
Yeah, but not everything has to have deep meaning.
They're based on like rock at the seaside.
Yeah.
You know?
You,
no matter where you crack the rock, it still has still the same thing inside it. That was kind of the only thing. Or licorice laces.
Yeah.
It's like wherever you break, it's still pink or yellow inside it. Yeah, I mean, I do like wall paintings. That one was a particularly bad one because the heritage area ended up causing so much shit. And even though he's the owner of the wall and the shop, he's not allowed to do what he wants on it. And they deemed it an advert, which is nonsense. And what's it advertising? All right, he's a framer and sells a bit of art. But I was like, if I painted the wall and I didn't sell in there, is it still an advert? An advert really has to have an instruction or a direction. Like, if you look at the definition, we didn't pay for it. Well, we didn't apply for planning or anything, and you're supposed to like go through these hoops. But we know they would have rejected the planning application, so we just did it. It's that thing of like, we did it. And one resident complained and made a shit storm about it. And because they sit on a committee that's in the council, this thing goes through and gets traction. We put an online petition. I've got 5,000 signatures in support of it. You know, the scales of opinion and justice. And then it was like...
Again, that's like that class thing as well, wasn't it? The authority not wanting to go back and see reason.
The correspondence they sent to Mark was... and they quoted the heritage area and why it was allowed. Yeah, and it actually says this heritage committee was set up to promote the arts.
Yeah.
But that was written before most of them people were probably born, because it was 1908, the date on it. And it's like, oh, now it's a grey wall again. It's been graffitied, like, by taggers.
Mm.
And it was... Do you know what's funny? I don't know if you know this, but it got tagged up, and someone sprayed BLM. The council come and remove the BLM. With a direct, like the guy who painted it out, and a direct orders to take down the BLM, not the tag.
Yeah,
I just think that's fucking funny. Like, that speaks volumes about that area and the people's minds in that area. And you know, I've been that's who I pay my council tax to, and they've shut my mural down and got it painted out. And I've painted in Miami, Japan, Los Angeles.
They're on about taking Ben Einstein as well, weren't they?
What, in Romford?
He's got two in Romford, hasn't he? He's got...
He got paid for them.
Yeah.
But it's funded by TfL.
Oh, was it?
Well, yeah. So the same council that got the funding and paid for the mural to be put up, within the same council, they're fighting to take it down.
Yeah.
And the local MP is not very supportive of anything like that. He blocked me on Facebook, actually. I made a habit of putting up his vote. You know, his public voting record in Parliament, which is... I'm not making this up. It's how he votes.
Yeah.
I just used to post it on community pages and go, this is the guy you're backing. A lot of you must be backing him because he's getting 75% of the vote here.
Yeah.
Do you know what he stands for? This is what he stands for. This is how he votes in Parliament. And in voting to lower disability allowance, raising tuition fees. Where's the counter to it?
Conservatives are cunts, aren't
they? It was funny because some graffiti appeared on Mark's shop the day before the election. Don't know who done it, but they're proper brave whoever did it. And they wrote Tory cuts, and the N was missing from cuts. Could have been cults, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Mm.
Most recent toy out. Scroobius Pip.
Yeah.
12 inch.
Yeah.
How come he's done 12 inch? Is it because he's much bigger than most humans? So you've done it down to the scale?
And his height. It's only because it's the third toy I've done of him.
Yeah.
Over, I don't know how many years, 4 or 5 years. We haven't done one every year. But I pitched him the idea many moons ago when I was on his podcast. It was in, I think I was episode like 80 something. So it was early on. Yeah. I think he's in the 400s now.
Yeah.
And I pitched him it before because I met him through friends of friends. Didn't really know him at that time, but pitched him the idea of doing him as a Star Wars size toy, three and three quarter inch. And he loved the idea because he's into toys connected. I met him, spoke about him, and it was an easy thing. So I did that, and then we did a He-Man one, which is 5 inch. Based on a He-Man toy, so he's like super pumped up, muscly.
And then that wouldn't do much for his ego, would it?
No, it was. I said we should have called it Scrooby as Ripped. But in the end, it was quite good because He-Man boxes have always got like a bit of blurb on them,
yeah.
That like funny lines. So Pip came up with Master of the Spoken Verse as a take on Master of the Universe, and I was like, that's so good.
Yeah.
That's going on there. And then he come up with Brains and Games for his little strap line. And then I come up with the little side spiel, which was like, rapping, stuttering, podcasting, you know. Yeah, yeah, and it was just like these four little boxes. And he was like, yeah, that's fucking amazing. Let's put all that on there. Yeah, that went great. And then this just felt like, well, We've done Star Wars, done He-Man. It just felt logical to do something action man size. Yeah. Just so it's like a, you know, it doesn't feel like it's not a toy.
Yeah.
It's not a toy, but it doesn't feel like it's not a toy when you keep it familiar.
Yeah.
That was the whole point of the toy.
So they're the same size as Action Man, but is that what they were? 12 inch, the Action
Man? Yeah. 12 inch, 1 to 6 scale they are.
And now, edition of 40.
40 of them, yeah.
They're now gone anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you go from here then?
What with Pip, just...
Yeah.
There's
if
loads,
it's a regular thing.
There's, regular as in maybe like every other year, but there's loads you can riff on. I don't know. I've got some ideas of maybe deviating from an action figure for the next one or something and doing something a bit different. So maybe we'll do that. I don't know. Could be a bottle opener. It could be,
you know,
like a wall plaque, or I don't know. There's so much. There's scope there. There's
well, he's got some very redeeming features, and he being very tall, long beard.
Yeah, at 12 inches, it's the most realistic. I mean, I didn't sculpt it. I worked with a sculptor. It's a weird one. We were talking about it before about, you know, like artistic credits, but they're. My ideas, my connection.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that.
And I commission him. Well, I can sculpt, not on that level. When I want something absolutely pucker, and a lot of the time I don't have time to do what I want to do anymore, so I have to outsource it to various different people.
Yeah, I don't think he's a standard at all.
It's like he weren't going to make the Scroobius Pip 12-inch figure on his own. Richard Martin, his name is. I shout him out occasionally on Instagram. Because I'd love him to, you know, do his own stuff, and he does do a bit, and it's really good. I mean, it's amazing. His work's amazing. And I met him through Ronzo years ago from Stolen Space, and he'd worked for D-Face and all that. This same guy, and I just kept in contact with him. Like we're sort of mates. We go to galleries and. Cinemas and stuff, but it's not always work related. It's just sort of a friendship, I guess, and kept him busy during the lockdown actually, because he's been stuck at home and he sculpts from home. So I'll just send him a message when I have an idea and go, what about this? And I'll send him a really shit sketch, and he's like, I really the looser the sketch for me. He likes the loose ones.
Yeah, he doesn't need the vision. He just needs the idea.
Yeah, because like. Well, he did the Biggie Smalls Buddha for me, like the Buddha Smalls, the original one of them years ago. I can't remember how long it is. It must be 5 years. And I just met up with him for a coffee about something else. And I said, look, I've got this idea, and sometimes it's just a note. And I've never drew the Buddha. But I was like, look, this is what, this is, I had a Buddha statue from the garden. And I was like, imagine that, but you change all these bits on it.
Yeah.
Like, literally, all this is all the bits I want changing. And then he was like, yeah, I could do that. And that's his gift. He can visualise, you know, all I have to write is Timberland boot. He doesn't need me to draw it.
No.
He can do it.
No.
And it works perfectly in that sense. So it's this is the thing. I do say to him, I'm like, I'll send you a WhatsApp message with a little brief. Let's call it a brief, but it's a message just going, oh, I'd like to do this, this and this. And you'll knock it out of the park. And 2 weeks later, it's done. It's like, it's ready to go. It's like, I've not really got a touch.
Yeah, but some people are more motivated to do a job for someone else than they are their own.
Yeah, he can absolutely, now, any brief I've given him, I don't think there's anything that I've ever got and gone, oh, that's completely wrong, we need to start again. Minor tweaks here and there. He's helped me develop some of the ideas. So some of the ideas that he's done in 3D were ideas that I now write ideas down and go, what's the best way to do that as a thing? You know, is it a print? Because that Buddha Smalls could have just been a print.
Yeah.
And then I would have been the one just photoshopping it or just manipulating this collage. And it would still probably work as a print, but there's a reason. I never did it as a print for the simple fact that the statues are so good. Like, yeah. I like them so much.
We had one as well in the garden. Everyone knows them from being a garden ornament, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's that thing of, I was just like, yeah, taking, you know, it's again, that's just another remix. It's just a...
So what's the artwork that's had the strongest emotional connection that you've made?
To me?
Yeah.
Would
it be one of the early ones?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think Reservoir Troopers, I do like the Honor Islam one because it's like the teardrop was like the first, it was a cliche drip of paint, but it was also open to interpretation. So people who bought it were like, oh, it's really clever, you know, she's crying, she's wrapped up in a burqa. I was like, well, I'm not telling you that.
No.
That's not the story.
That's not your job, no.
No, I'm like, well, it's a two-colour, well, three-colour, white, black and red. And graffiti, urban art, whatever, street art, it's all about drips and messiness. And this thing just so happens to have a teardrop,
yeah.
An elongated teardrop. I guess with the Mona Lisa, the entry point for that was like, I'd seen like a Banksy version, I'd seen the Marcel Duchamp version of Mona Lisa. It was like a really fun. So it was like, and I'm continuing to do this checklist of famous artworks and doing a take on them because I'm like, art history tells you that's okay. It's basically, again, it's like, it is a remix. It's that whole thing of remixing. But it's taking something like the Mona Lisa, the most famous painting in the world. There's, like, I've been sent versions where other people have done Burkhard Mona Lisas, but after my one. And I'm like, the chances are mine probably weren't the first one.
Yeah.
But I'd never seen it.
No.
I've seen versions since, which people have sent me saying, oh, you've been ripped off. And I'm like,
not been ripped off.
It's a fucking idea. All the ingredients, like, they haven't done the drip. They've done Burkhard Mona Lisa's, whereas, like, my one was poignant because I changed the name's an anagram and it's got a drip on it.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, if you're going to do something that is a direct, if they're doing it on purpose, firstly, they've got to then go, well, I'm doing it on purpose because I think yours is shit.
Yeah,
so I'm going to do exactly the same idea and improve it.
But even finding an old artwork, I don't think there's anything wrong in making a new representation of an old artwork, even if it's not yours.
I guess I'm like, what am I actually, someone asked me before what it was like, what am I precious about? And you find with a lot of artists are really precious when they've got very little in the locker. Whereas I'm like, well, I don't make my art purely, like, what is an original idea? Yeah, there might be a couple of dozen of them, and very, you know, every now and then you'll see one in art and you're like, fucking hell, they're the ones that make you go,
yeah, but then are we getting that mixed up with a seminal artwork? Excuse me.
Yeah,
but because we look at Damien Hirst's Shark, for instance, that is a seminal piece for him, but then no doubt people were putting stuff in formaldehyde 5 years before him, 50
years. Yeah, I've read like loads of articles that like try and trash talk him, and I'm just like,
yeah, but people have made seminal stuff. I mean, it's only people like who bring together movements. Like, what was the most recent movement, for instance? Possibly the Stuckists.
Yeah,
you know,
they're genuinely a movement when they were satirical about everything.
And that's turned around, and they're part of the system.
But I think urban art is the same. Like whatever it's going to be come to be known as, like street art, whatever. I mean, like, the essence of it was taken... It was social commentary, weren't it?
Mm.
Like, what Banksy does and a lot of this stuff was social commentary. And I think some of the best stuff still going is that. And that's when I'm like... That's where, like, Banksy, for me, he'll do them welcome mats. Did you see the welcome mats?
No.
Made out of... He'd done a series of welcome mats. They say welcome, but they're all made out of washed up life jackets.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So I'm like, but I don't like them as a object. Like, I don't want one on the wall saying welcome. And it, like, but the idea is brilliant, like, using that. And then it, you know, the same shit I got for doing, or you know, some people go, oh, that's just a copy of a, you know, you've taken a Warhol image and replaced bits. I'm like, well, but when Banksy does it, you're clapping him and you're ready to pay 30 grand for it. Like the Basquiat merry-go-round with crowns.
Yeah,
I like that image, but it's not one of his better ones, in my opinion. I prefer something that's like, I don't know, like barcode, like the cheetah walking out of the cage.
Barcode.
I think there's more in that as a consumerist thing, like a comment on capitalism. Whereas, like, even Choose Your Weapon, I did a riff on Choose Your Weapon because I was like, why that one is not one of my favourites is because if you take the Keith Haring dog out of it, it doesn't work. The image is pointless. But when you reveal the Keith Haring dog, what that represents, who that artist was, and then you've got this thug, fuggy looking, you know, urban rude boy, then it makes sense and it's a good image, it's funny.
But that just goes back to everything we were saying before. It's just taking work from a generation behind or some other generations behind.
Yeah, and he's referencing street artists, the original sort of, you know, you could say the original crop of street artists, even though they weren't coining that phrase, they just happened to do work on some of the streets.
Because I was talking to a mural artist the other week who doesn't call herself a street artist, but she does lots of murals, but she chooses to do them with a brush rather than
on a street.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
You mentioned a few artists. If there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Ideal group show? Oh, my God. Am I in the show? Or am I just curating?
No.
If I'm in the show, it'd be a bit awkward because I've ripped off loads of them.
Yeah, as long as they can't pretend.
Be like, oh fuck, that don't work anymore. I guess I'm a big Warhol fan, but again, having discovered Robert Rauschenberg, and that guy had it's just mental the amount of ideas he had, and some people have built careers on just one thing he did.
And I
sort of see, obviously Warhol took the idea of silk screening, but when I saw that Rauschenberg show, I'm like, fuck, he might have seen that.
It's nice to discover things like that.
Yeah, but like, you know the Kennedy painting? Did you see that show?
Yeah.
So it's like...
I didn't see that show.
So that predates... Something he done in silk screen predates Warhol's first silk screen. And you're like, chances are he went and see this show and gone, oh, I can do that. Oh, that's a thing now.
Definitely.
And that got the cogs in motion. So I'd say... Robert Rauschenberg would be good. I love Basquiat, just because of the energy. A lot of my favourite artists are American. Who else? be good to be in a show with Banksy, I guess, but I don't know if that would... I'm trying to think we'd all just sit together. I guess it don't really matter, does it? Yeah. I think Warhol would be funny, but then...
He comes out more than anyone, Warhol, in this.
Yeah?
With this answer, yeah. Just goes to show how much of an influence he was.
I think I'd invite Damien Hirst, but only if he brought Ronnie O'Sullivan.
David Hirst has done a big Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Yeah, it's amazing, that 147 break thing, isn't it?
Cool, isn't it?
Fucking, that's probably my favourite dot painting.
If you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
Now I'm trying to think of a job that don't have a suit or a uniform. I don't know, like, something with, well, sign making weren't bad. It's always, like, I didn't feel, it was a job, because...
Would it have to be creative?
It'd have to be creative, I think. I mean, for a time, I thought I wanted to do graphic design, and I realised I didn't want to do graphic design, because you're creative... You're doing a creative job, but you've got no freedom in it.
No.
And that was kind of what I discovered about model making. I'd studied model making, and even though I like making props and that, my wife did model making. I met her in college, and she went into and worked in architectural model making, which for me is like the anti-model making, because there's no freedom,
no.
There's no expression. No. And I get that, because I just couldn't do that job. Like I remember going to her work, and the things they were building were fantastic. Like I remember seeing the Swiss Ray building, the Gherkin,
before
it was fully opened up, and the model would come back to their place for a refurb, and it all lit up, and it was about 7 foot tall, the model, and something had gone wrong with it. Still, you know, they still use these models in the marketing suite, and. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, it's amazing to see it and how many man hours went into it. And they were like, yeah, that's like a £70,000 model. And I'm like, first your reaction is, that's fucking insane.
Yeah.
It's a model. And then you're like, how much did they spend building the thing? Yeah. The real thing. I wanted to do props because I was obsessed with film and, you know, like Star Wars and reading all the Star Wars books. All those fairy tales from all the people who worked in the prop shops was like, oh, we got given a brief, we had to make a blaster, and that's why a lot of Star Wars guns are old World War II rifles and German guns and that, and they just lump bits on,
because
there was only outlines, and so they ended up doing this bit.
And it was on the shoestring as well, weren't it?
The first one was, it was like, you know, they reused bits, and that's become part of like the allure of the fairy tale and all the Star Wars. But... By the time I left college, that 2002, I left, the industry was changing massively because machines like CNC machines, lasers, 3D printing weren't a thing then, but AutoCAD had completely changed. Just, you know, no one drew anything anymore. So everything was like in a computer and could be made exactly to how the designers sketched it.
Mm.
And so there was less... Do you have to do?
But that normally goes round in a full circle, doesn't it? Like cartoons, for instance, they was all done digitally. Now people are crying out for the cartoons to be done by hand again. Same as CDs going back to records.
I've just done a toy for Yoda as well, DJ Yoda.
Nice.
That's to go with that. But I've seen the picture disc. They haven't sent me mine yet, but they're proper like... Because I don't remember picture discs, but the guy who runs that label... DJ Yoda's label, he's a proper like nerdy record collector, and when I went there, he showed me some of his picture discs. Proper shit, like some of them are terrible, and then they've done this one, really bad photo.
Stu's proper stoked about it, aren't he?
Yeah, it's really good. Like, so just the amount of fucking energy they've gone and put into this, like putting a podcast on vinyl with
mental. Mad, isn't it? Mad.
I bet ya people jump on it. I did his music one.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, listen to loads of other ones that he'd done before. Because I was like, oh, I don't want to go in there. I'm not, you know, I know what music I like, and that's the one I want to talk about. I don't want to, like, come across as like I'm trying to be cool in it either. Yeah. I'm just like, I was like, I want to be a bit obscure. Like, I want to go for the most obvious ones, even though I think some of them, I was like, I don't care that that's an obvious answer. That one, he's his one was really good because it's like really clinical. You've got a certain amount of time, you've got to get it done and it's over, whereas we did one with about toys.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that went for fucking ages.
Mind you, this has gone. Look.
Oh, yeah. We was talking about toys for so long. It was well funny.
I mean, I'm not into Star Wars. Your enthusiasm about Star Wars, it was fucking contagious. I mean, it never made me want to go and look at Star Wars, but I just couldn't stop fucking listening. Because anyone who is so specific about any subject, I fucking love it. It doesn't matter what the subject is. Isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what I need to find some more podcasts that are like that. Like, their network is pretty good at that when they've...
Because Pitt is so precise.
He's built a network, that network.
Oh, yeah, I proper admire that. Yeah. Where can any... Well, what have you got coming up? It's a bit hard at the moment.
It's sort of depending on how this all plays out. And I was supposed to have a Miami show and I've got...
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, got all this work stuck. It's coming back to me, actually. I'm getting the work tomorrow, back from the storage in Heathrow. So I've got a show that was... I don't want to just fucking distribute the pieces from the show to the galleries that I work with over here, which I could easily do and sell them. Because for me, I did that thing of what you were saying. Like, I consulted myself before I did this show. And I worked, like the Robert Fontaine, who I was going to do the show with. We still probably might do a show later on, but he's had a lot of upheaval, and America's fucked. You can't go there.
No.
You wouldn't want to go there. He's in Miami, Florida.
And if you are there, you want to get out.
Yeah. And it's just mental. And I think he's moving to a new space as well. And the show was kind of built for the space he had on the based on the wall space. But I'd like to find a space and do a London show for myself, like do it, because I've never done that. I've always had a gallery on board, but I kind of don't want to. I know I can't do it all on my own because it's too much. I've done group shows back in the day, and it's even like getting a group show together. The flakiest thing is the artists, getting them all to fucking do anything. Yeah. Well, you know that. And you're putting your own energy into something, and then people just rock up like it's just happened.
Where do you want to do it? Or what sort?
I think I want to do Central, but then I'm like, is there any point doing Central London if no one's going to shows?
Mm. Well, I know a few people have done like window exhibitions. I know Ben Oakley done a window exhibition.
Did
it? Yeah, while the galleries were shut. I mean, he's in that nice little passageway, isn't he? And then he just put stuff in the window. I know it's sort of not ideal, but...
Yeah,
it's a good little concept.
Some of it could work, but then it's like I feel like I'm breaking the idea up of this show I had, which was the whole thing was like expanded on an idea that I've touched on a few times, which is my personal take on religion and belief and that, and all of the works were based around that, or they stem from that thing of my interpretation of it. And I don't want to break it apart for that reason. I want people to see it in that context of, like, it's not iconoclastic either. It's supposed to be. If you're someone with faith, this could bolster it. This could pump up the volume.
Well, it's like, did you see the one that Lee done with Dr. D with Jesus? Lee done.
Oh, one. Disco balls.
Done the image. He gave it to Dr. D. Yeah, because it was for the show, for the Face Value show, so Dr. D done his bit on it. Yeah. And yeah, Norman Cook's got one of those as well. He put that up.
Oh, nice. It.
Yeah, Lee was pretty chuffed with that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, Christianity, you can fuck about with Christianity, can't you? You can't go throwing Muhammad up there, can you? They get a bit...
Well, no, the whole point of like Muhammad is not meant to be depicted.
No.
Where I grew up, I went to school with more Muslims than I did the Catholics, Christians, Church of England, just because of the demographic of where I was. You go to most supermarkets will have some sort of Jesus religious thing within the supermarket, because there's a merchandise part to this. And I'm always like, that's why it's funny to me, because they're trying, you know, the Catholic Church, the Christian, you know, Catholic, Christian, all of that sort of stems from the same sort of place.
Yeah.
They're always trying to sell you statues, books, Bible. Like, there's all this stuff. The Pope drives around in a fucking modified mobile.
Yeah.
And you know, all the Vatican City, it's all about money, gold. Oh, like, yeah. That's, even if you believed in Jesus and the teachings, he wasn't that guy, was he?
No.
He was just rolling around with lepers and stuff and and like fucking poor people, because he was like keeping it real, and that was what he was about, helping like people with nothing. It's kind of weird how it's morphed into that. So I'm always like, they've set themselves up for this.
Yeah.
I don't know what the question was, but oh yeah, what's coming up? It was a religious show. That was it.
Where can anyone see your work, be it website or social media?
So my preferred social media is Instagram, and that's at Ryker Artist. So it's RYCA_artist. And then my website has also got the Instagram built into it, and that's Ryker.net.
And if anyone wants to buy your work, they can go through them or your Big Cartel.
Yeah, the Instagram has got the Big Cartel links. I don't think my website has. I just never bothered.
That's all my questions asked for these.
That was good.
Cheers for your time. And there we have it. Ryan Callanan, Ryker himself. Another thing we didn't touch on this podcast, which I regret not mentioning, is at the last Fatboy Slim concert, 2019, Ryan had a stall there creating live smiley t-shirts. How cool is that? So that's about it from me. I'm going to keep it nice and sweet. Ah, before I go, Tim Gatenby from episode 39. If you happen to be in the East End of London, Tim has got his solo show at the Woluso Gallery in Hanbury Street, just off Brick Lane, which got a great little write-up in Fad magazine by Oliver Malin, who also appeared on the Ministry of Arts podcast a few weeks ago, episode 73. Look at me getting everyone on the podcast. Anyway, that's all from me. So, like I say every week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. If you could do that, that really does help us get noticed. And anyone looking for an art podcast, it helps them too. So, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.